for inviting me to. This is a great honor. It's I have my mind, and even more my heart, that is flooded with thoughts about worship, about Bob. And so that will probably pour through just all the ways that we've connected. Even more than connected, we've collaborated, we created, and we circulated what we did. Those are four C's, by the way, we'll be talking about tomorrow, that have become very important in social media. Four C's, I call them, of to connect. We have a lot of ways now to connect and stay connected. To collaborate. Today, more than at any time, people recognize, at least in the U.S., they've moved away from the real strong sense of individualism, and they realize that creativity is a radius, not just a single point. And it's made up of a lot of people's ideas and thoughts. And all the big creative projects that I've been involved in, and small as well, are always some form of collaboration. And so knowing how to collaborate, building your radius of creativity, is very, very important. Okay? Even though it might be a single picture on an album cover, anybody in the music business understands collaboration, the film business especially. But I've got, like I said, a lot of thoughts. It's right about worship leader. If you look at this, does that word remind you of anybody? Remember? That's what Bob told me probably 30 years ago. You know, it was the most important word in worship. And, of course, he worked real hard to make us acquainted with the past. And we'll talk a little bit about the past. The problem with talking about the past, it's hard to talk just about a little bit because I like to say the past is vast. Okay? The important thing is not just remembering that we do, you know, have a past, but also how to rightfully divide the past. Like, what from the past is important today? What will bring that traditional authority that the past represents into our ministry at this point? Not just spelunking and getting the whole encyclopedia, but what from the encyclopedia is, like, you can use now. Like Lou Holtz at Notre Dame used to say, you know, football is a win strategy. W-I-N. And what is important now? And so as we look at the past, there's some things that we need to really learn and dig out, especially pre-print history, and we'll talk about some of those things. Now, I want a disclaimer. Oh, another thing about the magazine, you'll notice that's Bob. He's on page 20. There's Bob Weber. One of the greatest hoopla's in my life, I think, publishing life. And by the way, publishers today aren't print people, they're software developers. Pre-digital, we were print people. Now we're, just about every communication we do has something to do with software development, some kind of app, some kind of, some way to use the net to communicate. So, part of what we intend to do is to remediate Bob. And we'll talk about the importance of remediation. Remediation, a good example of remediation is you went out and bought an iPad, if you're a fool like me, and 6 months later they're selling you an iPad 2, which promises all kinds of salvation from the ills of the iPad 1. And there will be another, that's the world we live in, is communications and technology. That's why it's such a critical, important topic. By the way, you'll notice in here that if you go to the creativity conference we're doing in Nashville, it's entitled God Still Speaks, which is the title of the book that we're tearing apart the next 2 days. in a loving way. Okay? So, our whole year is on remembering. This is our 20th anniversary. That's a long time to do anything for 20 years. And yet it seems like it went by so quickly. You know, I was first introduced to the topic of worship through Bob's book, Worship Old and New. And what I would do at that time of my life, I was directing Maranatha Music. And at that time, I thought Maranatha was some word that had to do with little horn, big horn, and air boil. Those of that era will understand what I'm talking about. And then I discovered it was a word of worship. And I understand Daryl talks very eloquently about the five words of worship. The person who introduced me to the history of worship and what worship means was Bob. And I called him and met up with him in Chicago. And then, fortunately, Joanne's mom and dad lived down in Leisure World. And so they came frequently, or rather frequently. You know, Bob would tell me about how your dad would bring out these big piles of books, you know, and come in, and or articles, and that was his relationship with his father-in-law. He would read the books, and they'd discuss it at dinner. And so I got a lot of time to spend with Bob, because he was just 10 miles up the road. And those kinds of encounters. And we collaborated first on doing a worship journal. That was 1986. Which was the bedrock for Worship Leader. And Bob edited that for me. We also did a conference in 1987 where we decided, hey, we'll make this a different kind of worship conference. We'll actually worship. I want to talk about that a little bit because as you'll see, it'll be made abundantly clear, and you guys will be able to help me clear this up, and it'll make me a better publisher. And hopefully it will help us all. That is, as I started pouring into God Still Speaks, and here's my notes on that, just to prove that it's like a dissertation. You drop it from 5 feet of cracked concrete, you know. So heavy. As I started going through it, I'm going, what's confusing me here? You know, I'm like, it's phenomenal theological information about communication. Most of it is way ahead of its time. This book was published in 1980 by Thomas Nelson, and I think it sold dozens. Seriously. But now we're in the communication era where this is vitally important. And if you're going to go on the internet and buy this thing, you'll pay $400. Now, it just so happens I'll sell you this for $380. Any takers? If I told you it was signed, that I'd have to make a signature. You could probably fake it for me, John. But
we have a stamp in the library.
God Still Speaks. When he wrote this, it's very controversial. It probably still is. And many evangelicals, what do you mean? He spoke. And then we read what he spoke. You know, but what was confusing to me about this, and I'll just mention it, and then we're going to dive into it. And I started writing out my notes because to get my thoughts down and to keep them down. And so I'll read a lot to you from that and then invite into, you know, your discussion. What was the issue? The issue was, okay, where does theology stop and theoretical insight become important? Okay, how do those connect? And this book is chock full of theological insight. And at the very end of the book, there's like 13, okay, here's 13 principles to get from that. So what our project is going to be is looking at some of that theological insight and seeing how modern contemporary communication theory, by modern I mean in the last 40 years, and current up to the present time. There's a new book out which I'll bring tomorrow, by Elizabeth Drescher, who teaches spirituality at Santa Clara University, the Jesuit institution. And, you know, it's like, tweet if you love Jesus. But she's also a patristic scholar, okay, and a medievalist. And so she brings a real rich understanding of spirituality and history into the understanding of the internet and the role of the internet in terms of incarnational theology, which may be impossible for some of us to comprehend, but she does it very well. There's some writers that are doing these kinds of things that are going to be very, very important for you in your teaching, because not only your teaching, but your places and roles in ministry, teaching there, because communication has moved to the forefront. You know, even I think more so than leadership, but you get the big three circles: communication, community, and leadership. And within that, how we communicate through social media, how we're more attentive, how we're more connected, you know, and what we say with one another and what we do with one another in terms of communication. So I want to talk about that problem, about theology, like all the great qualities of water, and then the issue of theoretical insight. How does hydrodynamics work? To me, would be on the theoretical insight of discussion of water. I got a better example for you. I'll get bold and blunt with you right away. I'll never forget when I was I was a sophomore at Cal State Fullerton studying public administration. And my first career was in city management, which leads to what that slide's all about. This is my beautiful wife, by the way. And that's in front of our home. And it's involving a recent controversy that we've been involved in that went viral.
Yes.
You know, worldwide. And a very, very interesting thing. But anyway, so back at Cal State Fullerton, 1971, where my roommate was chairman of the SDS, he had a picture of Mao, Chairman Mao, and I had a one-way poster. And we sort of looked at each other, stared at each other for 3 years. I learned a lot from Bruce Kelly. But anyway, the Campus Crusaders came on campus, and they're wearing billboards. And the front of the billboard said, maximum sex. Okay? The back of the billboard said, Josh is coming. Mm-hmm. It was Josh McDowell, who was like an apologist for the Campus Crusade organization. And they're very good at these like top-down communication strategies, right? And so there's 30 of these people embarrassing us all over campus, all right? But guess what? It packed out the dormitory. There was like, this is a co-ed dormitory, 24-hour visitation, you know, cagers going on every night. It was like, I thought it was Peyton Place till I moved into city government, and that was even worse. Seriously. But anyway, there at Authors Hall, Josh came, gave his lecture. He's a very good speaker there, even then. And at the very end of the lecture, the old man of the dorm, he was 23, he had been to Vietnam. The rest of us were in college to stay out of Vietnam with our 2S deferments.
Yes.
And yeah, can I identify that? Yeah. We couldn't afford to go to Canada. We weren't that smart. So we went to school. So anyway, after his little lecture on maximum sex, the old man of the dorm gets up and says, "Josh, very good, very stunning lecture." I said, "But one thing, it's all abstract, theoretical. You know." What we want is, tell us your most exciting sexual experience. And, of course, Josh then had a problem, because he wasn't married. He's an evangelical, you know, I mean, he's not going to, if he had any kind of affairs, he's not going to admit to it, not in front of his crusaders and the rest of the people there. He says, well, I'm not married, but you don't have to swim in water to know it's wet. I'll tell you what happened the next 5 minutes was all but the 20 Campus Crusaders filed out of the room. Wow. It was the biggest, in fact, you know, even to call yourself a Christian in that environment for the next 2 years was impossible. Yeah, we know what kind of, yeah, we know what kind of Christian you are. You know, we know. It was a great lesson to me to experience that lack of authenticity or integrity in terms of communication, which was an important lesson to learn, especially what I moved into. I've talked with Josh. I was at a table once with him, really 15 years later. I said, "Hi, Josh. Hey, do you remember Authors Hall? I was there. You know, I walked out too." How many of you have been involved in those kinds of communicational experiences or attempts to transmit a message? Right? Today we've moved into a paradigm that's much more ritual-oriented. We're connected. Okay, we're not moving something merely from this point to that point. Everybody knows what everybody knows. Okay? Because of the kinds of media that we're in today. So, we're going to talk a little bit about those things, but this issue about dividing when we're theologizing, which is very important to know the truth about something, and then when we're looking for theoretical insights to communications, so we can know how to do it and the patterns and get some ideas and how to navigate what we're doing. One is connected to the other, and they can overlap, okay? But we can't pose something as one thing and deliver something else. Okay. Are you? And frankly, as I was preparing for you guys, and I've been thinking about you for a long time, but when I was intensely preparing the last week, and I was reading God Still Speaks, because my thought where I want to take us is to use this Bob's voice in communications and like re-earth this seminal thinking book, but then modernize it with your help, okay, and map onto this to his theologies, because this is basically a book of theology of communications, not one of theoretical insights in how to communicate. But we need this as an anchor and map onto it the theoretical insights that we get now in our, you know, this is what we call a pre-digital concept. And now that we're in the digital reformation, which I really believe in, I believe that God has, just like he granted us the printing press, we now have the digital social environment world and all these tools. It wasn't Stephen Jobs, they're God's. All these tools, how can we make use of those for the glory of God and the work of the kingdom? All right? So I'm here and I'm posing this to you as an explorer. And as I go through some of my thoughts, as if I'm, you know, I can imagine Bob back there with a full head of white hair just going, "Okay, Fromm, you know, hit me with your best shot." Okay? And so some of what I might say might sound critical, but it's not critical of Bob. It's like saying, "Hey, let's look at this idea and how can we freshen it? How can we remediate it? How can we wipe off the dust and use this now?" Okay? Because we can. And I think we should. His voice and his... He's one of those people that come around just a few every century. I remember a mentor of mine, Peter Drucker, who invented management. He was talking about my uncle who founded Calvary Chapel. And we were talking with him about succession. This was 15 years ago when he told Chuck, he says, "You can't retire." My uncle told him he's going to retire in 3 years. He says, this is like 12 years ago. He says, you can't retire. Men like you can't retire. He says, they'll look you up when you're dead.
Yes.
And then he told me after, he says, Chuck, son. And by the way, Drucker was a theologian first. Okay, I find the best theoretical insight people are theologians because they know the truth about people. Drucker was the first to translate the Kierkegaard into the English. He learned the Danish language to do it. Okay? That's how basically the guy, the modern management founder, was the first translator of Kierkegaard. He says, men like your uncle only come along once every 100 years. You know, I would say that about Bob. And you just looked at the fruit of his ministry, even now, with his school. And it will just continue to grow. I'm a product of Bob Weber. Worship Leader Magazine is the fruit of his insights in ministry. One of the things that Chuck Jr. and myself and Bob collaborated on in 1987 was a conference where we decided to do 5 different worship services. And that's what I was saying earlier, you know, how you actually worship, you know, in these conferences. And the first worship service we did was a second century model from Athanasius. And Bob and Chuck put that together. And then we did a free church model. And we did a Pentecostal model. I guess we did 4. And then we blended all 3. And guess what came out of that? Blended worship. And the idea was that, you know, we could use the past for the present. Okay? And we could, like, weave it together. Mm-hmm. And that is what we do. And even more now, because of the internet, we have an opportunity to be connected with the past. Mm-hmm. I passed out this. These are free. This is my ancient future. First thing I've produced in like 15 years, it's the Odes of Solomon, which is the first Christian hymnal. And we remediated these. People say, well, how do you know what the music's done? That's not, we wouldn't like it. You know, and we would understand it. It would be, you know, music is like socially constructed in terms of what is beautiful. But this is a remediation and an attempt to say, hey, look, guys that are writing hymns today, you're not the first poets. What can we learn from the hymnologists, you know, of the second century, probably 80 to 150 AD, somewhere in that period. And it's generated a lot of interest in patristics and early things. And so that's all I was to do was to publish music from the odes on forward, the next 400 or 500 years, I'd do it. I just can't get my kids through college doing that. So that's what the Odes Project is. Chuck Smith Jr. will be writing to him in a second. This is the latest part of my life. First of all, about 15 months ago, I had a stroke, a serious stroke. And I couldn't walk for like 5 or 6 months. So that's a miracle to me, to be standing. But I'll probably sit for a while. But while I was, the second day I was in the hospital, for a week, I was watching the news, and they were talking, was talking about the bankruptcy of Crystal Cathedral. And then the second part of that was like there's 8 to 10 million people now meeting in homes. Now, I don't know where he got on Sunday, which is interesting because we're doing that with Chuck Smith Jr. teaching. And I immediately thought, having been an ex-city manager, assistant city manager, municipal official, I go, ooh, there's problems ahead. Little did I know that in April of last year, I'd start getting cited by our city for having Bible studies in our home, having religious meetings. We had a hearing. The hearing was totally weird and unjust. We filed suit against the city for that hearing process. That made the news. They were saying that we had to have a conditional use permit in order to have a meeting of 3 or more in our home.
please.
Yeah, it violates all kinds of, like, American, you know, First Amendment. Oh. You see, municipalities, they didn't necessarily pass the zoning code enforcement people American history. Or they don't necessarily understand, you know, and police powers can get pretty weird. So we're flying in this thing, and believe me, it was like terrifying because 2 days after that story came out, I was like answering Fox News from New York. They wanted to do a 5:30 a.m. interview with my wife and I, and then it comes out in the Drudge Report. And it all breaks loose. You know, all the news people, they're bringing up their trucks to our home and the big satellite dishes and all this is going on. And the Lord really helped. He brought a Superior Court judge friend of mine who is sort of a Protestant Catholic guy. He teaches the spiritual exercises of Ignatius at the courthouse. Came to his fellow judges. He's licensed to do that by the Jesuits. But he also attends our Bible study. And so he and some other men and women came along as our wisdom and really helped guide us. And it was quite an experience. And that's what this is all about. Pay to Pray was this was on the front page of the local paper before it all broke loose, you know. This has a lot to do with worship, obviously, but I never thought I would be going through this kind of experience and getting something viral. In fact, last November I was at, 2 days at MIT, which for my little toe being in the academic world, you know, I thought, wow, this is pretty cool, you know, to be invited to this panel to talk. The subject was the future of music entertainment. And, of course, I'm very apprehensive once I got there. I go, oh, my goodness, what did I get myself into? My big mouth. And the panelist next to me, Erin McGeon, she was an independent artist. She was doing quite well as an artist and a poet. And she just put out a new record, which was sort of blasting Christmas carols, blaspheming God, for that matter. Mm-hmm. You know, but those kinds of people are celebrated in that environment. And I introduced myself as Chuck Fromm. He says, oh, I know you. You're the Bible boy. And, you know, see this? That was the best, pre-digital artifact I could find. A good NIV study Bible, you know, to pose for that picture. And she said, I want you to know, she says, I'm not a Christian. And I'm right back at, Autry's Hall and picture of Mao, my roommate. And I said, oh, Erin, and this just came from the heart. You know, I'm 61 with a stroke, and I'm the oldest dude on that. You know, the next oldest was the moderator, who was about 40, and she was the social media director at Kansas University. Okay, and so I said, "Oh, Erin, I'm so sorry to hear that." And she, I said, Erin, I said, people who I don't give a rip for a lot of people who call themselves Christians, but to be called a Christian would be quite an honor. You know, it was the pagans that called believers Christians in Antioch first. You know. Because they acted like little Christ. You know, but she said, well, I am a spiritual person. And that's sort of... And then I said something like, I said, well, Erin, that's a really good first step. I said, do you believe you are an eternal soul created by God? And she says, well, I wouldn't go that far. And I said, oh, I said, well, look. And then I told her, my spiel, I'm 61 with a stroke. And so I'm a little bit blunt these days, and I said, this is what I see it, Erin. If you don't believe that you are an eternal soul created by God, which means you have more value than MIT, than Boston, than the whole of the United States, in the eyes of God, you are more valuable. If you don't believe that, then you're a fascist. You have no other choice. She goes, whoa. And I said, yeah, because
You can sacrifice anybody, anything for the eternal state, for the Third Reich, you know, or for the institution, because people don't matter in the final. What matters is society and its structure and, you know, blah, blah. So we've had a great talk, by the way. And I love those kinds of, that made our connection. And so via the internet, you know, we're able to communicate and connect and have a great discussion. So I love the university for those kinds of encounters and that kind of thinking. So that's what I've been involved in. It's been an amazing distraction, you know, but being ADHD as I am, I love distractions. Off, talk a little bit about it, take a break, and then get right into our distinctions between theory, a theory of communication, and a theology of communication, and then looking closely at God Still Speaks. And that will be our sessions today. Tomorrow we'll deal with modern issues in communication and get into some, I think, some really good theoretical insights for social media. Now, that's my agenda. Do you guys have anything you'd like to hear or for us to dwell on? Yeah.
You gave us two of the four C's, connect, collaborate. What were three and four?
There's four C's, actually five.
Okay.
But academics wouldn't go for the fifth one. Fifth C would be capital. Capital. And I mean it in a larger sense, not just money, but knowledge is capital today. Connecting. Can't do anything unless you're connected. Bob and I connected over his book, Worship Olden Day. Okay? And once you're connected, you can collaborate. Okay? And that's learning how to work and share and build off of each other's ideas. You know, every baby is born bloody and ugly, has to be washed off and, you know, taken care of. That's ideas are that way. You know, and how to nurse and develop and encourage the development of ideas. Collaborate. Ownership is not so important, you know, in terms of the sort of the narcissism that we have in the music industry. Right, Daryl?
That's, you got it.
But collaborate. Then once you're collaborating, you can create. Then once you create something, you got to start playing it.
Circulate.
Now, the story that about Bible Boy went viral in about 2 weeks. Okay. People love to know, you know, I could probably sell a whole lot of books. I said, how to use the meeting. I got a call from a friend, Greg Laurie, who's a Harvest Christian Church, about 14,000 Riverside. He does evangelism. He's sort of like the last Billy Graham kind of thing. And he called me up. I love Greg. He's so practical. He called me up after a week. And he says, Fromm? And I've been on his board for 25 years, too. He says, Fromm, do you realize that your little Bible study has had more promotion and publicity in 1 week than all of Harvest Crusades in 23 years? I hadn't thought about it, but he was right. You know, and it cost us zero, you know, compared to the millions, you know, that had been spent in that endeavor. But look, that's what can happen today. And I think even a better word, and we'll get into tomorrow, is not viral. Viral sounds like it was unintentional, you caught a disease, you know, passed through the neighborhood or whatever. Viral, I think, is a bad term. Spread, how to spread the word through social media. That's more intentional. But people intentionally spread things. We've shifted models. It's not just, the receivers aren't just receivers, they're also the senders. Okay? Message, sender, receiver is the model that the evangelical church has run on for many, many years. You know, a very hierarchical kind of thing. We're sending this message out to people that receive it. Oh, and then if we're real smart, we have a good feedback system to hear. Now, that's trash now.
we're living in an era of many-to-many communications, not one-to-many, and where people make the message. They take part of what it is and they pass it on. And that's what happened to this story. You know, we had the ACLU calling us, one of our main support, because it wasn't just religious. It was like, knock, knock on the door. What kind of meeting you have? Do you have more than three people in here? If you do, $500 a meeting, a citation. Amazing, huh? In America. I mean, in China, I found out, you know, you only have to register if you have 25 or more. So, San Juan is a little bit more restrictive.
Yeah.
Okay. With that, we'll take a break. And I want to sort of set a tone. There's, by the end of the class today, I hope we could watch that. We're not going to watch it again, but we could tell the difference between theological and theoretical insights. And he's blending both.